There is some movement, and I don't want to, choose my words. There's some movement. There's been a response from there's been a response from the opposition, but yes, I'm sorry, from Hamas, but it seems to be a little over the top. We're not sure where it is. There's a continuing negotiation right now.
Yes, folks. Welcome. Left Reckoning 156.
Hell yeah.
I'm Matt Leck. With me, as always, David Griscom. Hello, David.
What's up, brother? I'm excited about our guest this evening. We're going to be joined in just a few minutes by our good friend, R.M. Brown. Always love doing that. Always love having him on the program.
His other name, Ledram James.
One of the best to ever do it. And talking about one of the best too, don't want people to forget, in the postgame, patreon.com/leftreckoning, we're going to be joined tonight by none other than our good friend, the doctor, Professor Ben Burgess.
You know, thank you for underlining that, because I was just watching that dumbass Brett Weinstein, who's been dining out on having taught for like a semester at a liberal arts school in the Northwest for a little bit. Mm. And everyone acts like he's some sort of Neil deGrasse type scientist. It's like he barely published. I'm pretty sure Ben taught for longer than that idiot did. But anyway,
we could ask him. Yeah, we'll have him exchange resumes. But yeah, don't want to miss that in the post game. Patreon.com/leftreckoning to get there. You know, so we got two quick things that we want to get to, both very important though, before we bring Ryan on. And the first one is just a kind of an important update and note. For people who didn't see over the weekend, there was another massive rally here in Austin, Texas, for ceasefire in Palestine. At the end of the rally, a deranged and dangerous human being went up and stabbed and attacked a group of people who were at the rally. One of the people, Zachariah Doerr, has, you know, sustained significant injuries in this attack, which the Austin Police Department are now labeling as a bias attack, right? An attack because this person was Palestinian. I wanted to, you know, just give a shout out and thoughts and prayers to the family, to the community, to everyone affected. A reminder to everyone out here about how dangerous the kind of rhetoric that we've been getting. Some of the people we're going to talk about later in this program, the kind of things that they're saying about Palestine, mm-hmm. about Palestinians, how dangerous it is. But also to sort of give an opportunity here to just share the words of the father of Zachariah, who spoke outside of Austin City Council today. So I want to make sure that we have that here. All right.
He's in pain, he's in agony, and he really have a message for everybody here. He told me, I want to go, I want to give a message. I say, I don't want you to go out there right now, but tell me what you want to say. He said, Mr. President, Mr. Joe Biden, I blame you. I blame you for what happened to me. If you would have called for a ceasefire 3 months ago, this will have never happened. In my own word, I would say, Alhamdulillah, thank God. Thank God that my son is safe. This is something I've learned to say from the people of Gaza. They taught us to say Alhamdulillah for everything that happened to us. Is it good or bad? Thank God for it. That's all we can say. I really stand here begging and asking for city councilmen, for the president, for the mayor, for Greg Abbott, to call for a ceasefire, to call for an end for this madness. This hate that's going around need to stop.
Yeah. And exactly that. And you know, I think when you see the climate that we're in right now, the political climate, the social climate that we're in, it's important to lay blame at the folks who are responsible there. So,
yeah. And just to anticipate the objection from Biden apologists, because you see it a lot, is like, he doesn't control the world. Well, he could have called for a ceasefire, then he wouldn't have this blame. And secondly, the folks that say that the president doesn't have that kind of influence, like, I'll just say, as somebody who's read a lot of historians on here, and I'll just name two in particular, Avery Shlaim and Tom Segev, Israeli historians. Tom Segev is particularly with 1967, Avi Shlaim, the course of Israel's existence. And the idea that the American government, and particularly the president, is irrelevant to their calculations mm-hmm. is ahistorical. If it's not true now, then it's changed. And Biden should act as if it still does matter. And if it does, and if something has changed, then we'd all be alerted to that. But my guess is the exact same way, the exact same reason Tony Blinken deleted a tweet days after October 7th saying we want a ceasefire and exchange of hostages. The reason that he deleted that is because it actually does matter what the American government's position on these things is.
Mm-hmm. 110%. Yeah. And the fact that Blinken was shifting their message, I think, is such an important kind of red flag, caught in the act aspect to this. So, you know, love and solidarity to all of those affected here in Austin. Obviously, it's extremely scary. The person who committed those attacks is in custody, and justice should be done there.
I mean, how many is that now? Attacks against
Palestinian
people showing Palestinian solidarity? I mean, I don't even want to say because I might miscount. I mean, at least three off the top of my head. Those kids mm-hmm. shot. I mean, the attack we saw in Colombia. Mm-hmm. The kid by the fucking landlord.
Oh yeah, Jesus Christ! Yeah, that was early too. Yeah, no, I mean, this is a dangerous kind of thing, and you know, when talk about equivalency and things like that. When so much of the conversation and the fixation of people in the media is like feelings of safety, folks, it's like, oh, you know, somebody, you know, gets offended when they hear other people calling for human rights. And there are just like actual freaks and psychopaths out there who are attacking children, young people, people at rallies. You know, and that's not people's focus. But the hypothetical situation is, yeah, it sort of shows the lack of actual interest in dealing with any of these problems. Well, folks, I think we have some UAW updates that we should get to. Let's just do this really quick and then we'll bring Ryan right on. Because I want to make sure that we're continuing to cover this, as we've sort of said that we will be doing on this program. The UAW is setting themselves up for another massive expansion, which is huge politically, particularly in the areas of the country where they are pushing to expand. As we've talked about on this program, there's an attempt from the UAW to expand unionization rates in the South. And the South, as people know, has been the receiver of a lot of auto plants in the past few years. Why? Because they think they can come there and they think that they can take advantage of folks. It's not because they like Alabama or Tennessee or South Carolina or these places more. They think that the government's there is filled with people who aren't interested in protecting workers. Most part, that's true. They also think that the working class people taken over by wokeness. They also think that working people in the South won't get up and get organized. And what's very exciting is all of these people in Alabama and in Tennessee are showing up and showing that a union South is something that is very, very possible. So I just wanted a like, quick update and shout out here. UAW has announced that they've gotten at least 30%, very likely more. This is a few days old, this report. 30% sign up for people to join up with the UAW in the Hyundai plant in Montgomery, Alabama, the Mercedes-Benz plant in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and the Volkswagen plant in Chattanooga, Tennessee. So a massive expansion here for the UAW, something that is absolutely critical. If you think all the stuff that people have been talking about for the past few years, I'm talking like Bernie Sanders, people getting activated, thinking of the socialists, think about people on the left, past few years, all of that stuff about a different future, about working class power, this is actually happening. And this is exactly the kind of thing that you need to be engaged with and fighting for. You know, we're going to talk politics in a minute. We're going to talk about some of these figures, these folks that we like to mess with. But this is the actual fucking work, and this is the kind of thing that you should be supporting and paying attention to. If you think that your politics are different from these other folks out there, this is exactly the kind of thing you need to be tuned into.
Right. And, you know, you can get yourself sort of existentially frozen by looking at the how meager is what we are seeing compared to what we actually need to accomplish, say, a just transition or controlling American imperialism. Right, obviously. But as somebody who, like, has been doing this since, I mean, it was just starting. Like, you saw some of, like, the Red State Revolt stuff and, like, right, like, at least this is here, because it's this sort of activity and the leadership we're seeing, not just by Fame, but like there's Brandon Mancia in the UAW. Mm-hmm. Like, that leadership could not exist. And it could be more even, and we obviously have our reservations about the timing, at least, of the endorsement of Biden. But like these sorts of, like, we could have the situation where they aren't saying jack about a ceasefire and just endorsed Biden like months ago, right? So, you know, I think, yeah, absolutely, it's positive and needs to be cultivated and protected.
100%. And, you know, actually, I think we'll talk a little bit more about Sean Fain and the UAW endorsement with of Joe Biden in the post game. You get access to that patreon.com/leftreckoning. Reminder, folks, we are going to be joined by Dr. Ben Burgess. In the post game, we'll be hanging out, telling some stories. And we got some very fun Weinstein. I always forget how to say their name.
Damn. Yeah, now you got me
sick. Now I got you fucked up. Well, anyways,
Brett Weinstein.
The guy who thinks he's figured a lot of shit out. We have some good clips of him we'll be talking to Ben about as well. But without further ado, let's bring on the man of the hour, our favorite expert on Newsmen, none other than R.M. Brown. How are you doing, friend?
Hey, what's up, guys? Thanks for having me on your show.
Thank you.
It's good to have you
joining us. Yeah,
I think your mic's setting.
Oh, my mic's messed up.
Yeah, I think we're getting your on board mic.
We're getting on board. Is it bad?
Yeah, it's probably bad. Do you guys want to kick me out for a second or something?
Is it, how long of a fix is it? We could talk a little bit if you need a moment.
Yeah, maybe talk for 1 second, because I just got to go into the settings.
Okay, cool.
We'll be right back. Yeah, why don't you play music for a second? We'll be right back.
Okay, cool. Here's a little bit of tunage.
Let's try that again. Take two. We are joined now on Left Reckoning 156 by our good friend, our expert of Newsmen himself, R.M. Brown. How you doing, brother?
Do you copy? Can you hear me better now?
We copy.
We hear you.
Oh, there my we go. God. Well, thanks. Yeah. Hey, thanks for letting me ruin the show. You know, appreciate it. It's kind of what I do, you know.
For all the segments of yours that we've stolen, I think we're even. So
exactly. Yeah. For the amount of time that you saved me, it's like, shit, I haven't done anything for Majority Report today. Let me just skim through the. I do want to say also, have you told a story about going to the vape store at 3 a.m. and the line that the guy gave you, which is you only wanted one cartridge, and he said, "You're at a vape store at 3 a.m. And I gotta say, I think I would have reacted differently. Like, I think I would react like, damn, like, that is very frank, and you're right. You're absolutely right about
me. Yeah, shout out to the vape store guy. He is the most hard-selling. Like, he's really trying to move those vapes. He will hit you with every manner of sales tactic. So big shout out to the 24-hour vape store.
Yeah, I know that feeling. I mean, in New York, you can just, you go to the bodega, as people say, obnoxiously.
What's that? What's that?
The feeling of like, I should just go to sleep. But it feels less bad, I think, just walking outside than I think getting in a car and starting it up and having to park and stuff like that.
Well,
but anyway, that's
not what we... Well, hey, wait, before we move on from that, what's your 3 a.m. bodega purchase?
Sadly, it's soda.
One of the worst ones.
I know.
That stuff will kill you.
It's 3 a.m. Yeah, what's going to help me sleep? Sugar and caffeine, of course.
Yeah, exactly. I got another like 3 hours of being awake. So.
Hell yeah.
David, you got your 3 a.m. purchase? Or?
Oh, yeah. Let's hear David's.
I mean, you know, if it's not beer or some form of nicotine.
That Howard or Chuck Schumer's trying to outlaw.
I mean, look, the cute answer would be a taco, but like the fucked up crazy guy, I'm getting some Takis. I'm getting something that's going to make my stomach real upset. I'm getting some really spicy sugar chips. Whatever one is closest to me as I'm walking out is definitely what I'm doing at 3 a.m. at the gas station.
Yeah, exactly. Go for it, you know? Why not go for it? Go for the worst possible thing.
Yeah, make the bad decision every night.
Yes. That's the message. We should have...
Actually, you know what? That's not true. You know what I do get, actually, in all honesty and pretty frequently, is I've convinced myself that, like, the Jack Link's beef jerky is, like, really healthy and good for me.
I have that, too. I do that same thing. I'm like, oh, I'm getting protein here.
Yeah, I'm getting some protein.
I'm doing something right.
Yeah. I mean, that's why... Is that why people like the Jordan Peterson sort of meat diet?
Oh, dude, I'm sorry. I love that shit. I think that's the coolest thing about Jordan Peterson is the all-meat diet. Those guys, there's a few of them, like, you'll get into who are, like... Or like vegetables are like going to kill you. Like it's not just like don't eat vegetables, but like vegetables are like have evolved to be poisonous to humans.
I've got good news.
It's like, hell yeah, man. 7-year-old me is just like, I'm all about this shit. I can only eat burgers and steak and no vegetables. In fact, they'll kill me.
No. Yeah. Finally validation on that belief.
So I think, I mean, I know we have a couple things to get to tonight. I mean, maybe we can dive into somebody who does have a lot of opinions on eating a lot of meat and yes. protein. And that's our boy, Joe Rogan. Matt, how would you want to set this up for us? Because we got a little trip.
So this is a fascinating section of, I think, something you've been following, RM, about the Joe versus the radicals. And he's getting hysterical, this is him. What I also like about this is how unhappy Bobby Lee is for this to be brought up, right. And the look of panic and upset, as if like, damn, you walked me right to that thing I didn't want to talk about. And
Yeah, maybe we should say, like, to me, Bobby Lee has always been a very light, like, absurdist comedian. Mm-hmm. Like, that's his thing. And, like, Joe will just not let him cook on that. Like, that's all Bobby Lee wants to do is do his wacky thing. And Joe's like, no, we got to go into this serious stuff over and over again. That was a lot of the comments I saw. Was just let Bobby Lee be Bobby Lee, you know? And it's
right. Can't happen. And, but what's fascinating is, you know who else didn't let Bobby Lee be Bobby Lee is the government of Israel, or at least people who wanted to.
Oh my god, that was an alley-oop right there! If I ever heard. Holy moly!
And so yeah, I think this is fascinating. And Joe Rogan's sort of paranoia about bots and stuff, which
is so good.
But anyway, without further ado, here is this section here we'll go through.
Friends, it's a funny podcast.
Thank you.
You guys are good together. I want to talk to you about an episode that I saw. But you having to go to Israel, was that on that or was that somewhere else?
Yeah, it was that.
What was that like? Tell me what happened.
Yeah, already this is not going to be fun.
Immediately.
He like Bobby Lee really is a master because like it's just like he says everything with that little like sigh, you know, like here we go. Here we go. Joe's going to bring me down. Here we go.
Friends, it's a funny podcast.
Thank you.
You guys are good together. I want to talk to you about an episode that I saw. But you having to go to Israel? Was that on that or was that somewhere else?
Yeah, was that?
What was that like? Tell me what happened. Do you not want to talk about it?
Do it. Because I'm not saying anything that's like wrong. It's just something that happened. So, I get a call from Steve Byrne.
Okay.
And Steve goes, you want to go to Israel?
How long ago is this?
14 years ago, maybe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
12, 14, I don't know. And I go, why? I don't want to do a show there.
First of all, what pre-production work has Joe done where he asked this but has no idea the time frame in which it's happened? Like, did you actually watch the episode? Or I don't okay.
I mean, I
watched this segment, and yeah, you're right. I don't know. Maybe he gets like a little sheet with just maybe one line on it.
We can ask Ben. We got to ask Ben in the postgame.
Yeah, maybe it was just like Bobby went to Israel, you know. I don't know.
I'd say like, hey, producer, maybe like leave that one out. Yeah. I don't know.
Because Bobby Lee just seems just ecstatic to talk about it. It's not going to cause any problems for him as a touring comedian.
Straight down the camera like, oh, God. Like, yeah, literally you could do the Arrested Development music at that point.
Oh, you know, I got a call and they're flying out a bunch of comedians and actors and it's a free trip. And I go, why? I don't know. They just want to show us the country and their culture. And you get nice hotels, free meals, and you get a tour of like...
Are you not performing?
No.
Nothing. Okay.
So I went there with Jamie Chung, Brian Greenberg, they're actors, and Steve... Lopez went out, George Lopez.
Okay.
And we went out there, and then when we got there, they were like, welcome. We're like, thanks. And they were like, but every day you have to tweet how great Israel is.
Every day?
Yeah, like put out a tweet.
They told you have to. And
what I imagine for this segment is I wish I had the capability to do one of those sort of CNN-style audience live reacts, because I think there's part of here where you're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We're getting somewhere with this conversation here. We're seeing how a government propaganda is just using celebrity, something I think relevant, I mean, to people who've been focused on Taylor Swift for a long time. And so I think people would be like, oh, yes, Joe, positive for the Joe. I'm having a positive Joe Rogan experience right now.
Anything about that before you left?
I don't remember them saying it before.
But they might have?
They could have.
Right, maybe they said it to Steve, and Steve conveniently left it out.
I don't know, but I do know that I feel like if they did say it, that I would have questioned it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Aware. So this is the early days of Twitter, right?
Yeah.
So when was Twitter's only like 12 years old?
Maybe it was 10 years ago then. I don't know.
How old Twitter? Oh, there it is.
2006.
Israel Unfiltered. So 2006.
Yeah.
Look at that.
So 2006. When was that?
Look at your face.
Yeah. I'm like, I have to tweet. Yeah. But here's what happened. As soon as I tweeted the first thing,
mm-hmm.
I already knew. Like, oh my god, I think I'm in trouble.
Why? What'd you say?
I just said Israel's great. They're beautiful people. You know what I mean?
Okay.
And then like it was just like, and they flew us out here for free, and then you would just get 1,000 like. You know what I mean? That were like, you know, Palestinian, you know, and going, you motherfucker, you know, and just, it was like negative. And there was these gigantic wars that would go on the comment section.
Oh boy.
It just got really uncomfortable. And then I just remember, you know, yeah, there
look
I am.
At you. Nice hat. Yeah. Bro, you should wear that all the time.
I know, I look cute with it.
Is that the famous wall?
That's the wall, yeah.
What did it feel like to be around that wall? That wall's old as fuck, right? How old's that wall?
I put a note in it.
Wow.
You could write little letters, you know what I mean?
Letters to Jesus?
Yeah. And I just, you put
Dear
it in
Jesus,
there.
When you come
I
out.
Think mine was like, let me get more pussy or whatever.
Now, I don't know.
That's what you're
particularly.
Doing
particularly. I'm not a theologian. Is that the thing with the Wailing Wall? Letters to Jesus?
Well, he says something. If you want to just play the next part, what he asks for might be interesting.
The wall's old as fuck, right? How old's that wall?
I put a note in it.
Wow. Okay,
Bobby. You could write little letters. You know what I mean?
Letters to Jesus.
Yeah, yeah. And I just, you put
dear
it in
Jesus,
there.
Jesus, when you come
I
out.
Think mine was like, let me get more pussy or whatever. But nice. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But like.
That wall. How old is that wall?
Nice.
19
BC.
Yeah.
Wow.
But then toward the end, I was just like, I got to get the fuck out of here, I think. Yeah, I was just like.
How many tweets did you make? And did you keep going? After?
One thing that's fascinating to me about that is that's, it's like, those people are actually trying to help you. Like you did. And what's fascinating is like, he even says, Bobby says up front, I don't want to perform. So the awareness that there's something wrong here was actually there. Right. And like, I remember, I mean, this is my, I've probably not listened to a band more than Radiohead in my life. And unfortunately, Radiohead decides that, I think this may be in 2015 or somewhere around there, that they're going to play Tel Aviv. And not only are they going to play it, but they're going to like dismiss activists and inciting other people who are not listening to the boycott calls. They cited J.K. Rowling of Harry Potter fame. So like that is, I don't know, like that, I'm glad that awareness was there for Bobby, but like those people, it was negative and like it was getting through to Bobby. And what we're seeing here is like, how do you react to that when you are a public figure? Because I remember when I first got Majority Report, a trans listener of Majority Report went through my tweets and found one where I tweeted something about RuPaul, saying RuPaul had something about, hey, don't be afraid of the T slur, right? And they called me to task for like, why are you speaking on that, right? And like, whether or not I agree with RuPaul's like overall sentiment, and I'm like very ambivalent, to be honest, I'm definitely too ambivalent to actually have an opinion on that. And like, I think you should just listen to some feedback and not, I think Joe Rogan has gone the other way where it is driving him absolutely insane, like right in front of our eyes.
Yeah.
They were attacking you?
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Let Joe go.
All right.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
you have to. Otherwise, you don't get your hotel.
Yeah, it was like a free thing. And I didn't know the significance of it until later, almost, like, you know what I mean? Or the significance, but like what the impact of it, you know?
Right.
Because I you know, obviously, you know, I mean, obviously, I have my opinions about it, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That I'm keeping to myself, but it's like.
But this is the free speech zone. Let's get with it, guys. Come on.
You know. It's not all fully aligned, you know what I mean, with what people think that I should be, you know. You have to be careful because I live in LA and, you know.
Oh, I hear you. Yeah. Look, it's a complicated issue.
It's so complicated.
And it's terrifying.
Yeah.
When you look at the video of when they do an overhead of what Gaza used to look like and what it looks like now.
It's
insane.
I'm curious. I think Bobby, and maybe that's just because I want to believe this about Bobby, but I think he's saying, I want to be more critical of Israel, but I can't. Because we have seen what has happened to people in Hollywood for being critical of Israel. And there's all sorts of things with management of celebrities whose names I am not familiar with because I barely watch movies. But like my sense is it's much easier to be pro-Israel than it is to be pro-Palestine in these days, unless you're doing it the extreme degree of like some Zionists where they're like, yeah, I don't have any sort of qualms about the bombing campaign. Like, yeah, that's going to like cause some problems maybe too with PR. But yeah, I don't know. I think Bobby Lee was coming down the right side there.
Yeah, I mean, he at least, you know, I think deserves credit for being curious or interested in wanting to understand the issue and not just kind of, I don't know, not just take talking points or something. I think he deserves credit for that, you know. But I don't know. Yeah, I guess it's an interesting conversation too, because he does seem like he's being pulled in a lot of different directions, you know. He doesn't seem to want to talk about it in the first place, which is I kind of get because he may, you know, maybe he just is not like going home from comedy shows and like reading about this stuff or reading articles about it. Yeah. So he just wants to be a comedian and he's being pulled into this by Joe. And he also doesn't want to be ostracized for whatever reason in LA. So I don't know. I guess I feel a little sympathetic. I don't know, but it's nice that he does seem legitimately curious and like want to understand things. I don't know. That's always been something about Bobby Lee, is he actually is a really smart guy and he cares about, I think he does care about serious issues and humanity and stuff. And, but yeah, he just seems really like being pulled by this. It's, I don't know. It's a little sad in a way. It would be nice if he could just, you know, say what he feels about it, but he's being careful, I guess.
Yeah. And part of this is the overall like environment that Rogan is creating for these conversations, right, which is like trying to get him to pathologize the left all the time and like whine about trans people or whatever.
Go ahead, right. Well, this is why, you know, not to take away from what's coming next, but this is why the next bit of this clip is so amazing, because yeah, it's going to start actually looking very strong for a second, and then it's going to take a turn.
That's yeah. Like, yes.
Complicated issue.
It's so complicated.
And it's terrifying.
Yeah.
When you look at the video of when they do an overhead of what Gaza used to look like and what it looks like now.
It's
insane. It's fucking insane.
So yesterday, it's going to take over a year to clean up just the rubble.
Oh my God.
But it's like 25,000 now?
At least. They don't know how many people are dead. They have no idea.
And just the
half of the population is women and children.
And the trauma.
Uh-huh.
And the fucking, you know, famine. It's just, I just can't even comprehend it really.
Yeah, and the Israelis tell you that it's necessary and that they have to get rid of Hamas, and this is the way to do it. But just,
I mean, Jesus, I believe Christ. That. I believe that. I believe that maybe that should be, but I think the approach could be different.
Yeah.
Right?
Well,
or no?
I don't have any expertise in war.
Neither.
But I'm horrified that they can just shoot missiles into buildings, and they tell people to get out, but then they bomb the areas where they're going to. I mean, the whole thing's nuts, man. It's nuts, and it's so dangerous. It's so dangerous. These Free Palestine marches that are happening all over the world.
So, yeah, right? Like, we already start to wobble a little bit, in my opinion, when he does the Israel says they have to.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, yeah, groups that do evil things have a rationale for it, but I mean, we'll let him cook on this. Like the dangerous thing here isn't the tens of thousands of people dead and hundreds of thousands fucking starving and all of them displaced and at risk of like removal. It's these protests, man. We might get another, it might be like the George Floyd protests where the mobs are upset again.
Those are all organized too, by the way.
Those,
when you get on social media and you see, then they bomb the areas where they're going to. I mean, the whole thing's nuts, man. It's nuts and it's so dangerous. It's so dangerous. These Free Palestine marches that are happening all over the world. Those are all organized too, by the way. When you get on social media and you see the Free Palestine people and the pro-Israel people, what percentage of those people are bots?
Right.
It's not zero. It's not so zero. There's a lot of what's getting stirred up, a lot of the
hateful.
When he's saying this, is he talking about like what he's seeing when he's on his phone, or is he talking about like people on the streets being bots? It's like, it's not really clear because it sort of sounds like he's mainly talking about the protests at first.
Right.
And then he says, how many of the people out there are bots?
Yeah. I would also just remind folks how this conversation started, which is that Israel gave Bobby Lee an all expenses paid tour and all he had to do was do social media propaganda for him. But yeah. Okay. Like, I mean, yeah, I'm sure the Palestine bots are, I'm sure there's just as much of a budget to get like fucking, I don't know.
That's why Matt's been going to Ramallah.
Theo Vaughn's going to Hebron.
Being said, a lot of the crazy things that are being said, I guarantee you a lot of that's being instigated by foreign countries And that's what's scary about social media and the influence it has on people and the way they feel about a particular issue.
Now, what foreign countries? Now, again, I guess we'll put our allies aside because, as we know, Israel is hiring our comedians to go vacate. Is China really, really stoking the Palestine thing? What is one of our main criticisms that we like to hang on China is their treatments of the Uyghur Muslims. I don't really think China is stoking this, actually. And Vladimir Putin is Nancy Pelosi. Maybe Rogan should have Pelosi on. They might have a lot to agree about what's coming, what's behind these protesters. Because Pelosi said it's Vladimir Putin. Yeah, Putin really hates the Americans blowing all of their like ammunition, not to mention their credibility on the international stage that they were trying to use to like get people to go against them. I'm sure Putin hates this and hopes it stops. Like, what adversary? Iran? Well, they mean Iran, I guess, in this case, don't they?
I mean, have you seen like I think we have to be serious when we're talking about like foreign involvement in like social media, for example, because look, stuff's happened. All the countries wanted to do it, right? But like actually being successful at it is like one thing. And you know, I'll start with like 2016. All these folks went absolutely wild with the Russia stuff. And they're like, you know, Russia is like influencing the election and like that's how Trump won. It's like, no, we can see the patterns. We might not like them, but we can see the patterns of how Trump won. And like when it comes to like the actual like bot farms that Russia was putting out there, if you see the stuff that they were doing, it's like the most bottom of the barrel bullshit. Like they had a Texas secession Facebook page. And like one of their popular posts was literally a post of the state of Texas lines and says, "We love the Texas shape," right? You know, so like even like on the level.
I booked those guys. Should I cancel?
You know, I mean, it's just like this whole paranoia that like, look, there are people who are like bad actors out there. There are people who are paid money by governments. I think that's more of a real thing. But this kind of like fixation of like everything sort of being driven by these false reality. Like when you interact with the bots, like the bots are extremely low level, stupid bullshit. So to sit here and to say that like the reason people care about Palestine is because they're being driven. Like, I guess what I'm saying is like, without even getting to the level of like, is a country doing it? Just like actually thinking about what kind of, you know, phenomenon that would be and actually seeing the proven examples of these kind of influence operations, it does not add up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you know, there was a huge, like a massive, I was actually surprised at how big the protest was here in Austin. There was a huge protest and you were there, right, David? And you know, I was there and you know, walking through and I talked to a few people and you know, I don't know. It does seem like there's like a media reality and then a real outside in the world reality. And if you talk to a, you know, a 30 something year old woman who has family there, you know, it's pretty obvious to see what the concern is. And, you know, I, if I were her, I would feel the same way. You know, it's just a human reality, you know? I mean, it's, yeah, the idea that, because he does say that all, it's like yeah, all, it's all manufactured or something. And I don't know how you would come to that conclusion besides like, a sort of disconnect between media and reality, because it's just obviously not true. I mean, if you step out into the world, it's just not.
You have to like, you have to have everything, not to be too cute here, but you have to have literally everything being mediated for you through social media platforms to do that. And look, Joe Rogan has like a nice place out in West Austin. He probably is not driving down too often to see the protests.
Right.
You know, and I mean, I gotta say, from what his Tesla, whatever, the people probably do look very scary to Joe because he hasn't seen normal people because he's living in a fancy ass community out there. But you know, I mean, yeah, it is absolutely Looney Tunes stuff.
He's becoming hysterical on social media. I mean, whether it's like, and this comes from like also distrusting people in general because that you could believe the population is so easily swayed by bots that they could be moved towards these sorts of protests, or they could be moved towards like gender reassignment surgery or whatever. Like mm-hmm. you have to have very little faith in people. And I think that's off. That's kind of like what underlies a lot of this.
Well, it's like, who's the boy from Malaysia whose name I always forget?
Ian Miles Chong.
Like, Rogan is becoming like that in the sense that, like, Rogan is in a compound and he's like reading about this foreign country where all this crazy shit is happening and he's really mad about it.
And that's why he does sound like Pelosi. Like, they might have different positions on Ukraine, but when it comes down to like what's behind all this stuff, they are both like, you know, a tinfoil hat. There's just a little bit more of this here.
Okay.
And that's on top of the horrific nature of the issue itself. Yeah. Both of October 7th, which is undeniably horrific.
Horrific.
And then this. And then on top of that, you have this open anti-Semitism that we never saw before, where it's just open everywhere. It's wild.
It's fucking terrible.
It's so scary, man.
But it's also an issue that will never be resolved.
But it's not just that it'll never be resolved. Like, I never thought it was going to be an issue where the presidents of like major universities were standing in front of Congress and they were justifying people saying death to the Jews, that it wasn't harassment unless it was actionable.
Oh yeah, we can leave it there. Of course didn't happen. That's not what happened. What happened is that there was a like conflation of, say, liberation slogans like from the river to the sea, which could mean, say, we want one democratic state for all peoples to live safely from the river to the sea, which is a context more and more people are saying it in, frankly. Or you could say it like in the context of Bibi Netanyahu, which case it actually is genocidal, but that's not what they're concerned with. But the people were not chanting slogans that were calling for another Holocaust. People were criticizing the state of Israel for doing the exact same thing your guest that has made your guest afraid to talk about his experience in Israel, Joe. And so that's the scary thing, is how even Joe is part of this suppressive idea. Because, like, I mean, they get into the other example of society going too far is the bin Laden stuff, which they get into next, which is that, like, apparently everyone was saying bin Laden had a good idea. And, like, again, you look into that story and that was massively inflated and exaggerated to the point. And the only thing that was mildly interesting is that actually, I think certain people were surprised that it didn't just mention like American are too free, but also mentioned like actually Palestine is a longstanding grievance in the Middle East. And whether or not you trust the sincerity of certain actors declaring themselves champions of it, probably do the right thing and stop stop the dispossession and oppression of Palestinians, and then you won't have to deal with these sorts of confusing issues. But
like, this might be a little off topic, but I thought that TikTok thing you were talking about is interesting in terms of like how like social media content works, because it's almost like What the message was really there is that if something starts trending, people will latch onto it. You know, like, it almost doesn't matter what the content is. If there's something that's trending, people will almost as like, I don't know, like a market or whatever, they'll like figure out a way, they'll like latch onto it to try to get themselves in the cycle. You know what I mean? It almost like doesn't matter what it is. That's like the what I thought was like the obvious like material takeaway from that. But yeah, it goes, somebody in the chat said, why does it lie? Which is Joe Rogan's famous line. And I don't know, it makes me a little sympathetic to him in this weird way, because yeah, why does it lie? You know, like, if you watch something on whatever the media or social media, it's like, I don't know, it would be nice to be able to just be able to trust it and feel like it's an honest conversation. But if you don't have some kind of a critical lens, or, you know, maybe you actually really care about or want to understand issues, you're asking why does it lie a lot, and maybe getting fooled and bamboozled a lot, maybe.
And getting getting more and more mad at the left too. Like you yeah. people, like the you people are getting played. No, Joe, that is you constantly in front of everyone's eyes. Like it's you being scared about white genocide in South Africa. It's you mm-hmm. being concerned. All the, like as a fucking throwback. I thought we passed the bathroom wars, right? Like, and Joe Rogan is still being like, look at this, this very convincing documentary footage, and it's like a fucking skit. And like
that was wild.
That was a wild one. I mean,
could you remind people about that story if they missed it?
Yeah. So Joe Rogan watched a video that was so clearly fake. Like, there's, I don't. Again, it does come back to me feeling a little bit sorry and sympathetic for him. That it was so obviously fake. Why would you be, first of all, the actors were totally unconvincing in the thing. I mean, like, yeah. it was no, the like setup,
you mentioned like the opening shot of yes. the film
yeah.
is basically the mother and daughter that were about to be upset by the scary trans person. Them not yet even walking towards a bathroom, but kind of set and then beginning to walk towards a bathroom. Like, who is filming this?
And somebody holding hands, and holding hands, right?
Somebody sensed that at this park bathroom, some real stuff was about to go down, and they filmed it. And you know, and also a clue might have been that the name of the account that it was uploaded to was somebody's name and comedy and skits. Yeah. So it does make me feel sorry for him. It makes me like, okay. Like, yeah, he's a little bit of an older guy. He's not like, I mean, like if you're a Zoomer or whatever, you're going to spot that and be like, oh, like I have radar for this. This is fake. But yeah, if you're like looking for something, it's almost mm-hmm. like a supply and demand thing going on, just like with the TikTok thing. It's like, if you're like looking for something, somebody will like create it. So you can be like, yes, that confirms what, you know, it's there. And if you don't have like a critical lens to look at it through, you'll just be like, there, that supports whatever I want to believe, I guess.
The litter boxes thing was the same thing where he's like, yeah, I have confirmation at the litter box. And like, here's the thing is like one simple test is like to look when people start talking about misinformation is who are they worried the misinformation is enabling to act on misinformation? Is it the regular people, whether it's like Antifa or trans people, or whatever, or is it elites? And the thing is what we see is Joe Rogan as a media elite. Maybe he's independent or whatever you want to say for a $250 million Spotify guy, who's not apparently not legacy media or something, whatever. Like that, he is an elite. And he is constantly being played by misinformation, and it has a massive effect. Like that's mm-hmm. this motherfucker who got to squat just the concept of being curious and like kind of irreverent for mm-hmm. the American male and of our generation. Like what when he decides like, okay, I'm going to spend fucking another 3 hours with Brett Weinstein talking bullshit. Like that. It's at least a waste of people's lives. And like, he's doing that based on bullshit. And that's mm-hmm. a bigger problem than and I'll go up the ladder of like the Iraq war or say, withdrawing funding for the United States refugee, aid, systems, UNRWA, like based on just a notion that Israel said, like, that's the kind of misinformation we should be worried about is what makes elites do not. Is the mob getting out of hand with something again?
Yeah, totally. I also don't know if you guys ever wonder about this, but like there is like a good version of the Joe Show, which mm-hmm. is like, you know, here's a supplement that you could take, or here's like a exercise you could do. I got somebody on who drives race cars or whatever. Like, how much does his audience get from this? Like, because it's not a very deep analysis. It's a lot of kind of regurgitating stuff from mainstream news. Like, are they super turned on by this even. I don't.
I mean, look, you know, and in fairness, because we do a longer podcast too, it's, you know, they're 3 hours.
Yeah,
yeah. You put them on and it's just like, you know, you tune out when it's a little boring and you know. No, it's like, yeah, you can't even listen to him. You know, if he has a hunting guy on, like, you know, they're going to talk about hunting for maybe like 25 minutes until this guy's going to start talking about school boards and the problem with the American public education system.
That's what's wild, though, is like, if I wanted to enjoy it for the comedians, it's like, why are you talking to fucking Stav about immigrants?
Exactly. That's like, it's treats and girls. Like, that's there it is. That's what people want to hear when you have Stav on, you know what I mean?
It's yeah,
like, no, let's talk about, let's do like this kind of you know, just like really kind of superficial you know, I don't know, talking point thing. It's like that. It's not fun either. Like,
no,
I mean, yeah, I don't know.
It's like Rogan enlisting comedians to be therapists for his morbid thoughts. Like,
yes. And he did this with, like, you know, you have this kind of like raucous group of guys. I was watching one where it was like Ari Shaffir, Shane Gillis, and I don't know, some other guys. And yeah, he kept like, so, and they're all high. They're all smoking weed, right? And it's like, okay, it's dude's night. You know, we're just having a good time here. And he keeps like, it's almost like party buzzkill kind of stuff. Where it's like, well, let's talk about this. And they're just like, oh, you can feel it deflate. Like, here goes Joe. Here we go.
And you know, and the thing is too, is like, I would be nervous. Like, let's just say I'm in on the Joe Rogan podcast for whatever reason. And I'm just trying to, I'm there in a friendly way. I'm just like trying to be on the show, talk about whatever my thing is. It would be very scary to be on the program because Joe is going to bring something up. Right. And you don't have, like, we have the ability afterwards to be like, hey, that's a made up story. Right. But Joe's about to bring up some story that you have no ability to reference or understand. Right. He's throwing bombs at you basically the whole time you're there. I mean, so I want to ask you this, buddy. Because, you know, we have a couple other things I wanted to get to with you before we go. But, like, so you know, you watch a lot of these newsmen, as you call them. And, like, I think Joe is a particular one, right? And I'm curious what you think about this. Because I think Joe is, like, ironically, because he's the biggest of all of them in a way. He has, like, the biggest audience. But he's also, like, downstream of, like, the kind of right-wing, independent, weird media, whatever you want to call it, matrix, that he's just like consumed all of it and it's making him a little bit disturbed. Do you think, is that fair? Because I want to talk about the other guys, because I will say on the other side, I think like the Dave Rubens and the guys who are trying to generate the conversation are having an impossible time because they have to take their orders from Trump. Right, because you never know what Trump's gonna. You can usually guess, but you know sometimes they'll throw a curveball out at you. And these guys are getting into trouble because if they're not getting the marching orders directly from Trump, you know, they can maybe make an opinion that's outside of Trump world and get themselves into trouble. Right, so they have a weird kind of derangement that's going on. But I don't know if that theory seems workable to you as somebody who's been watching a lot of these guys.
Yeah. There's like different versions of this that are like unique to social media. Celebrities or social media, whatever, influencers, whatever you want to call them. And a lot of those guys, like maybe Dave Rubin, I don't know, they're like, they seem audience captured. And you can kind of, if you reverse engineer it, or you like, you see the steps, like Glenn Greenwald probably got a lot of subscribers from going on Tucker Carlson, maybe. So right. It's like, then it becomes your kind of, like, in you're serving an audience, and you're scared that if you say things that they don't like, they're going to leave, and that's going to affect you materially. So you can see that, like, directly influencing their content. Joe doesn't have that as much, I don't think, right? Like, he's been around so long that, like, he's more of like a staple. He's more of like, it'll pop up on your timeline. He could say whatever he wants. So he seems more like organically drawn to certain kind of media. And that might be like the interesting psychological study, is like what it's like an aesthetic maybe that he's attracted to. And then whatever these talking points get in, and then he pulls them back up. That would be my guess. You know what I mean? But it, and that also, it just, I don't know. It's just like a an interesting example of like if you don't really know or have like a critical lens of what you're looking at, like that stuff could get through, I guess. I mean, I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, I think you know, Joe is eating from the trash can. That's our boy.
Yeah.
With the white tablecloth and everything.
I mean, do people know? I don't know. Do people know Nielsen ratings anymore? I think they do it automated now. But Nielsen is this this sort of service that used to track dating for viewership data for advertisers. Mm-hmm. So you keep a journal of what you're watching. Mm-hmm. And they'd give you like $15, something like that, for turning your journal in. It would demystify a fuck ton if Joe Rogan had to publish just his entire YouTube browsing history and all his TikTok scrolling. And he'd be just like, he's fucking dumb as shit. Like, look at this guy.
That would be fascinating to just see the diary for sure.
I mean, but they're all like this. I mean, Elon Musk, you know, too, not that I'm here. Here's the thing is like Joe, like I'm actually like genuinely like I want Joe to like be better and to figure out what he needs to figure out. Okay. Elon Musk, I could give two shits about, but he's on a lot of wild stuff, too, as you can expect. But he literally was retweeting Amy Therese, which is like a deep dive. Elon Musk was retweeting Amy Therese the other day, which is like if you're getting to that level of just wild internet conspiracy right wingers, and for people who know the lore, you know, Amy Therese used to run in some circles with us, even Matt.
Elon's very online in a weird way. Like, he was responding to Tim Pool about Emma Vigman being a pedophile, allegedly.
Sex edits.
But like the thing is like with a giant platform like that, you do quote tweets if you want to really like, you know, fuck people up and send all your people. He was just replying to Tim Pool like a fucking fan. And of course that would draw some attention to it, but it's not, it was weird because it's like even that engagement, it's just like you're just kind of discrediting yourself in front of everybody.
Yeah, he's like, he's losing the plot. And like these guys, I mean, I guess what's funny is, look, I'm not a big believer in like generational politics. I'm also not a big believer in like the Fox News has created like the entirety of the right wing cycle machine. But it becomes a little bit more acceptable to argue when you watch both Joe Rogan and Elon Musk, two guys getting older, having their brains slowly turned into sludge by interacting with a bunch of flashing, images and, you know, scary sound in the background.
I brought this up. I don't know why. This is like what pops into my head as an example. There was an Adult Swim show like 15 years ago called Fat Man Stuck in the Internet. And I always think of that because it's like, I don't know. Yeah, it does kind of feel like being stuck in the internet because it's, and there was also a book in the very early days of like, you know, social media called The Shallows, which was just a guy, it was like a pop psychology book, but it was basically this guy saying like, hey, there's this phenomenon I'm seeing where people are kind of like, their brains are changing in the way that they consume media, where instead of like reading a book and trying to like really understand an issue, they're kind of skimming headlines and they see a post and they'll like believe the post. And so it's like, there is like this almost like, it feels like a fish in a barrel aspect to it, or like if you're not actually reading or trying to understand, there's all this bait in the water that can catch you, I guess, you know. And that feels like what we're watching with Joe is he's just like got a hook in his mouth a lot of the time, I guess.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean Joe's, because we saw with our previous two presidents, they're very much television guys. And like, you know, I was talking about like the misinformation. Are we worried about the effect it has just on the broader population or the elites? Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I read Neil Postman, Amusing Ourselves to Death, he's a NYU sort of affiliated media writer. It was all about the effect television would have on society. And it's like, yeah, damn, people are going to get stupid. What we didn't realize is like, actually, that's the presidents, though. Right. Like Trump is going to be absolutely fucking fixated on the five every morning. Mm-hmm. And then Joe Biden is going to get in office and he is going to be fixated on Morning Joe. And that's going to be the slight improvement that we clock there. And I mean, and the thing is like, you like to think that Obama was better, but Obama was like, yeah, give me the new Jeffrey Goldberg essay. and then that's something like the misinformation is coming from inside the, or is problematic inside the White House.
Yeah, no, totally.
Well, talking about misinformation and people who are caught on a hook, we got to talk a little bit about what's been going on here in Texas, which has been this convoy going to the border. And look, I think I feel really bad for people who live in South Texas and in these border communities, particularly people in Eagle Pass, who seem to be like the number one favorite of weird right-wing activities. People like RFK, anyone who wants to go and get an image of them with people crossing the border, like, we're going to Eagle Pass. We talked last week about how this convoy, which has had a lot of trouble getting off the road, or I guess getting on the road, stopped for a long time in Dripping Springs, Texas, which is pretty close to where we are. It's not really by the border. And that's where the big celebrities showed up, right? That's where it was a little bit more normal, I guess. It's like not to call Sarah Palin and all these folks normal, but you know what I mean? The bigger names, the people who want to land at Austin Bergstrom International Airport, you know, they pop in, they show the party. And then the real wild guys went down to the border. And we have some video here that I wanted to share. Maybe first, just to start the scene and remind people of the seriousness of this, is that, like, you know, the potential of something, you know, dangerous happening is really there. These guys are, you know, not only are their politics dangerous and all this kind of stuff, they are completely deluded as to what the reality is. They think that they are driving down to a literal war zone, which is a dangerous thing to hop up a guy driving from Virginia, then seeing, you know, Sarah Palin in a nice little outfit and Ted Nugent wailing on the guitar. You know, these guys are worked up when they get down there.
On yellow peril. You
know, and they get there and they see something like this. And this is from Christopher Hook, a reporter here in Texas, who was down in Eagle Pass. And look, this is just to show you people the oddity of this. It might be hard for some folks to see, but here's a truck with just like 10 million fucking flags on it. You know, a bunch of Trump decals, just sort of like circling the parking lot of this restaurant where these people are having a nice little Saturday night in their town. You know, and like this sort of, you know, is just like one particular image, and there's a bunch of them out there. But as Christopher Hook says, strange scenes in Eagle Pass tonight. Folks are out there having a good time, and there are these trucks with 80 decals and 100 flags and out of state license plates just kind of circling. And I'm sure people have probably seen some of the videos. There's been a lot of Christian stuff going on. Well, actually, before we get there, I will say, I was saying before we started to Matt, like, there's really something that is funny about watching these guys, because, like, there is something about the Trump rallies. We've all seen them. They're very funny. There's a lot of characters out there. I would love to do an in-depth report on the guys who sell buttons and t-shirts and flags.
No, David and I came up with a movie idea where it's the rivalry between two Trump merch salesmen as they go across country, and one's a little bit, maybe a little bit crypto DeSantis-y, but you know, it's where the money is. But anyway,
sorry. Yeah, like a buddy road comedy.
Yeah, totally. they learn to love each other for in hatred of DEI,
or like Kingpin. Kingpin, but instead of bowling, it's you know. But you know, so anyways, and like, because you know, but this stuff is volatile, because, you know, going back to like how hard it is to sort of hold these coalitions together. And again, I'm not downplaying them. I literally was just saying how dangerous they are. But when you watch these movements, and it's just wild, because you have people coming from all different geographies, political persuasions. And one thing that is very funny is, like, I don't know, Texans, Texas people, I love them. Everyone knows that very much. You know, that's a big part of who I am and all this kind of stuff. But also, Texans are so worked up about people from the rest of the country. And it's very funny to see this kind of fixation of the right. You know, that's like, oh, we're going to come down to Texas. And it's like, look, I'm like, Greg Abbott likes it. People like it on Twitter. But everyone here is also super worked up about people from California coming to the state of Texas, and they don't give a shit if you're a conservative or a Texan, right? You are already automatically there with suspicion. And anyways, we could watch this clip to see how well, you know, this is going on the border here.
No free speech, no guns, no offensive Christians. What kind of conservatives are you? Oh, you're from California. You're not even a Texan.
Oof. San Diego.
Like America doesn't believe in that Constitution.
Watch what? Hey! No,
no,
no, no, no, no.
No. No.
People broke that border gate. People, man, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? Pedestrians have the right of way. People protest, huh? You're a violent thug. You're a violent thug. That's all you want. I got watch out. This guy's trying to.
Wait, is that Ninja Turtle?
Where's
the Ninja Turtles?
On the back of the truck.
I'm completely fixated on that truck now. No, it's not just the back. It's like a full Ninja Turtle wrap.
That's really sick.
It's oh my God.
Yeah, well, I agree. Send those guys back. Get them out of here. No, I mean, like,
look. I love hearing pedestrians have the right of way.
Yeah, pedestrians have the right of way.
He pulled an "I'm walking here" at the rally. Holy moly!
It's a beautiful thing to see. You know, these people still can't come together.
This is why the right never wins, is they always eat each other. We're always eating our own tail.
As the left always loves to say about themselves. You know, so anyway, so like, you know, the right wing stuff, hopefully the convoy goes away. The stories have been funny. I don't know if you followed it at all, RM, but like, it's been funny. They had a lot of trouble. They got lost in a Bucky's parking lot for like 6 hours. Because for a while, there's just like 20 of them. You know what I mean? And a few people showed up at the end. They've been having a hard time. But you know who else has been having a hard time is Joe Biden and the Democrats, who, as I'm sure everybody knows now, did an excellent gambit where they said, hey, what if we go more right wing than the Republicans and try to push an insane immigration bill? And maybe the Republicans will line up behind us and stand with us. And surprise, surprise, the Republicans weren't very interested in doing that. We've sort of talked about how nasty Biden's, you know, the Biden push, the plan they were pushing is. I mean, it's, you know, it's a nightmare psycho bill, expanding detention capacity, shutting down the border after certain thresholds are met. And of course, sending sweet, sweet money to the folks in Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan. But what's been really funny about this is like watching the Democrats like cry and be upset that the Republicans sort of said, oh, we don't want to do your plan, right? Which we all sort of knew was going on. What's been really interesting is watching like the far right characters have to figure out a reason to be against this bill, right? Because they can't just say, oh, we need Trump or something like that. They have to come up with something different. And if you don't mind sticking on for just a couple more minutes, RM, we have a visit here from one of the great newsmen of all time, Alex Jones, who breaks down why this bill is so, so bad. And apologies, he gets to it in a second, but I had to start it early because the intro that he does to the segment is so goddamn good.
Can I just say, sorry, but Alex, why are we so fixated on Election Day? Like, I mean,
y'all catch me up on my Jones lore. I thought there was a period of time when he was anti-Trump, right? Wasn't there a period of time during the Trump administration? He's like, Trump has been taken over by the globalists and he's sort of turned his back.
Yeah, he was at one point. Yes, he just moved on.
I guess you can do that with that audience.
Yeah.
I mean, the funniest thing about where this video comes from is I watched like the full episode and I haven't done that in a long time. I did not watch it. I jumped around in it. But an hour and a half of this like 4-hour episode is literally just a commercial for gold. So like, you know, we can get a little bit too worked up about trying to find internal consistency within Alex Jones. But just watch this intro here because it's pretty special.
are 273 days, 12 hours, 53 minutes, 41 seconds out from the most important election in world history. I'm coming to you from deep in the heart of Texas, Austin, broadcasting worldwide, thanks to your support, your prayer, and your word of mouth. All right, look.
All right.
They just released...
Sorry, this is like the most pregnant pause of all time.
That's the... oh, shit, I'm actually considering my deep... personal issues while I'm on air pause.
Oh, man. All right.
Quote, bipartisan Senate bill that they claim they have the votes for to pass in the House and Senate. And I got up about 5 a.m. as I normally do today. A couple of-
just love the flex, you know?
Yeah.
Alex Jones works harder than the rest of us. All right, let's see. And what's he doing?
Like, I woke Kobe up a little Bryant early dude. Today.
I mean, he left out this part. He's up at 5 a.m., but the first 3 hours he's eating kolaches. So let's be clear on what's going on during that time.
Hours of research for my daughter and wife got up.
Flexing on his daughter and wife. And he has a new wife, I guess.
I saw the subsections of the bill that Jack Posobiec and others were posting, and I went and read most of the thing this morning. And it's a big bill, but there are sections in this that even shocked Alex Jones, because I know they're a bunch of criminals.
Oh,
but it actually says that Biden has the power of a dictator, which shows they would never give this power to Trump. So they.
It literally says, by the way, it's section 1-2B. Biden has the power of a dictator. All right.
But Trump might win the presidency. Like, this is sad to see him just chill. Yeah. And to be like, you know my reputation as the crazy guy who's always crazy about everything. But even me, like, that's like a aging football player throwing in his last moments of relevance for like a pain relief.
Oh, yeah.
They intend to steal the election in 9 months. And it says, for any reason, Biden can declare an emergency and do whatever he wants on the border.
So what's ironic about that, and not to be the typical David Texas politics nerd, but as people know who've been watching this program and have read my writing, this is literally what Governor Greg Abbott has done. Right. He put Texas under a state disaster declaration during the COVID-19 crisis. And he said, because of COVID-19, we have to send troops to the border to stop the inflow of migrants into Texas. Right. So, you know, this is not a defense of Biden or an interest for him to be doing any of this kind of stuff. But it is always wild to me to watch. I guess I shouldn't be surprised. But look. It's completely ridiculous for these guys to be talking about that when, like, literally the governor of Texas, which, you know, we're also seeing Alex Jones now getting cozy up with Abbott, too, which is like we're watching Jones go from, you know, free voice for patriots and liberty loving folks to a deep state shill. It's pretty sad to watch.
It's sad.
Including in cities around the country and giving them unlimited money. And it gets worse. Only the special court in D.C., which they totally control. You've seen all the kangaroo action there, all the rigged show trials there, that court has the jurisdiction. And I mean, I sat there and marked up the bill. There's got to be like 30 things in there that are just jaw-dropping.
Flabbergasted.
And I would let you go in, but like you never hear, if it's 35 minutes left in there, and you'd never hear one. which is so good. I gotta give, you know, we're back, baby, right? I was getting a little nervous about him, but boom, let's go.
Well, I saw 30 one of my, I can't remember what he was talking about, but I don't know if he still does this, but he used to have like 8,000 pages of documents on his tape, printed, you know, basically like printed screenshots from Twitter on his desk. And I remember one time he did a thing. I can't remember what it was. It was like a year, maybe a couple years ago, where he had some document about something. And he was like, he picked it up like he was going to start going into it, like reading about it. And then he goes, you don't even want to know what's in here. You don't even want to know. How do you want to look at that?
Okay, great. Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, Dave Rubin did that too when he played the Ilhan Omar video. He's like, At first, he's like, watch this or listen to this. And I guess you'll have to read it, but listen to it also because of how scary his Somali language is. But then he's like, look, there's so many things we could have played from that that would have just blown your mind. It's like, well, select one that like you don't have to mistranslate.
No, that's like literally your job, right?
Yeah, yeah. Let's go into a point, maybe. Let's hear.
Like, that's why you have producers. As a producer, like, go through that shit, take some time codes, and let's isolate some examples.
Yeah, but if he were to do that, he would have to wake up at 4 a.m. As you said, he wakes up at 5 a.m. That's when he does his research. He doesn't have time to isolate the quotes.
Yeah, he might have cut back a little bit, too, on the production budget a little bit.
Yeah, and I'll just say this. I haven't watched his program in a long time, so it was funny to go onto it. The best thing ever are the commercials on it.
Oh yeah.
Like he does the live commercials, which are very funny, but it's sort of, you know, the world's going to end and you need gold, which Matt and I were joking about this last week, is that like, I don't understand the idea that like in a post-apocalyptic world, like people are going to want like your doubloons or shit.
Yeah.
But the best thing is he's selling every product, and it doesn't matter what it is, that gets like a kind of show ad, a pre-roll ad, you know, it's just crap from Amazon, right? Like a flashlight or like some other, you know, doohickey. But it always is framed in the same way. It's like the government does not want you to have this flashlight. Because this flashlight is so good. Yeah.
The government does not want you to have Hello Tushy.
The government hates drop shipping, I think.
So it's super, super good. But maybe we could do some more because I actually had a lot of fun revisiting Jones. He did a video, and I would play it on this platform, but this isn't a free speech platform, so we would get in trouble for playing Star Wars on this program. But he played a video of Obi-Wan Kenobi getting killed by Darth Vader, and he just plays like the straight clip from it.
Oh, he does kind of stuff all the time. Yeah,
but he did something so sick, right? Yeah. It was so good I couldn't handle it. Where the opening of the clip is like Darth Vader slowly approaching Obi-Wan Kenobi, and I don't know Star Wars well enough to do it off the top of my head, but he does like, you know, he's like, I used to be the learner and now I'm the master, something like that, right? Before he says the line, Alex Jones says that line into the microphone. So he's like, I used to be the learner, now I'm the master. And then Darth Vader says it right after. It's so good. I think we got to do some more Jones stuff in the near future together.
Did you guys ever read his leaked I mean, you know, this was a while back, but did you ever read his leaked text messages?
I remember hearing some of the highlights.
Oh my gosh!
It's been a little while.
Oh my gosh, they were really wacky. But there was one point where, because he, you know, he's in a lot of arguments. He's in a lot of interpersonal drama. Let's just say, and there was one point where he was arguing with somebody, and he'd argue, and then there's just one text he writes, "Got in crash." So I guess he was.
Oh, yeah.
Don't text it. Maybe that's a message. Alex, don't text and drive. Like, come on, man.
The issue with his wife, like, hey, respond. That was the one, right? Where he's like, yeah, like, hey,
where look, are you?
You're not responding to me. I don't know. Maybe I'm being too much. We've all been there of like trying to get somebody to text you back and being kind of pissed off. And you like, well, I got in a car crash now. It's kind of your fault. I wasn't so agitated. I maybe would have crashed yet. You should probably call me and see how I'm doing.
Oh, man. I think we have some good ideas for the next time. But, brother, I really appreciate you spending some time and joining us this week on Left Reckoning. I'm sure people already know about the wonders that is the Aaron Brown Experience. But for those who don't, tell them a little bit about your program and where they can find it.
Yeah, it's RM Brown, the YouTube channel, and I upload there, you know, like 3 times a week. So, and I love you guys, and I'm a fan. It's one of the, I think I've told you this, it's one of the few shows where I feel like I am actually learning something. So yeah, thank you guys for doing what you do, for sure.
Likewise, I'm a patron of the RM Brown podcast. And I also would like to say it is a deceptively informative show. Obviously, it's very funny. Obviously, you like that piano music. But actually you learn something and a little bit more in depth than you might expect, because yeah, you do a lot of actual research into the issues that you mine for comedy.
You actually get the time codes after you find the 30 things that made your
yes, jaw exactly. drop.
But brother, do appreciate it. Everybody, show is not over. We're going to run over the postgame patreon.com/leftreckoning to get it. We're going to be joined by none other by Dr. Ben Burgess, who is also a friend of all of ours. We're going to be hanging out. We got some Brett Weinstein. I'm trying to not say the end of it because I don't know how to say his name anymore, Matt. I lost that.
Weinstein.
Weinstein.
It's like I like Weinstein. Brett Weinstein. Brett Weinstein.
We're going to have a lot of fun over there. Patreon.com/leftreckoning to get access to it. You can also buy merch. You can get that cool hat that Matt is wearing at leftreckoning.com/store. Appreciate all of y'all so much. We'll be over in the post game. We also have bonus episodes on Sunday for patrons. I'll probably do a Griscom stream this Thursday. We'll have to see. Take care, everybody. See you soon and have a good evening.
Peace.